Hey Adam, how you been? Good?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. Besides that, I live in the state of Illinois and I worry a lot. You know what you
Well,
and I what you and I are getting ready to talk about, you know? I mean, you could look at it as an academic challenge, right? Numerical challenge of how you make things balance. But the fact is, it's more than an academic challenge. I mean, when you look at it as that I, Adam, Robert, doesn't matter who you are, we own a portion of this debt. It's not academic. How we are going to solve this is going to affect very nearly every soul in this state.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, budgeting is a moral problem at the end of the day. And the most comprehensive numbers I've seen come from Truth in Accounting, and they calculate what's called the debt per taxpayer burden. They say that right now it's over $50,000 per person for every individual living in the state of Illinois. And it's actually bound to get a lot worse over the next 5 years if we do nothing. So right now we've got a bill backlog of about $7.8 billion. That's projected to grow to $24 billion by the end of this five-year period if we do nothing to change the status quo. And so what we've done is we put together Budget Solutions 2020, which is a plan for us to pay down that debt, balance the budget, and actually get us to a deficit-neutral tax cut at the end of that five-year period.
All right. Now, what's interesting is you take a look at what has already happened and said, and look at this, if we had made these changes, where would we be? And kind of employing those numbers to project what you could save in the future.
That's right. So we did both backwards-facing and forwards-facing just to show that if we had implemented these changes 4 years ago, we wouldn't be in a place we're in today. We would have balanced budgets, and we would be in a much better, healthier fiscal position. And really what we're doing is just looking at the areas of the budget that are growing fastest, that are taking up the largest share and a growing share of the money we all give collectively to the state. And we said, how can we bring these costs in line with what we can afford so that the cost curve isn't growing faster than what we can afford? And the two big areas that we're looking at here are pension costs, which have grown at 677% since the year 2000, and the costs for government worker health insurance, which have grown at 244%. Everything else has grown at about 18%, other than K-12 education, which is about 73%. So there's two numbers there that are much larger than everything else, and so we focused on those, and we've got a plan here that structurally reforms those programs. It still leaves in place a very generous compensation package for our government workers, but it makes sure that that package is in line with what we can afford so that it's not growing faster than our incomes, because ultimately that's going to be unsustainable.
Well, give me a synopsis here of what we're talking about when it comes to, because we've got to attack apparently employee insurance and pensions as a whole. I often wonder if you can do this without a multi-prong approach. Can this be done? Let's start this way, Adam. Can this be done without big tax increases on the state of Illinois' inhabitants?
Absolutely. We don't have a single tax increase in this plan. There's alternative plans out there right now that are proposing massive tax hikes, and that really is the alternative. I do say you have to attack these cost drivers. What I don't do in this budget is, you know, slash social services or cut, you know, state spending on infrastructure or any of the valuable services that people actually like and want out of their government and the things that actually contribute to a healthy state and a growing economy. So what we do is we look at the cost drivers. You know, there's an analogy in the report that if there was an individual who was spending double the national average on food and housing, maybe they had an extravagant apartment that was way too big for their income, and they were eating steak dinners every night, and they start racking up credit card bills, and they start missing their electric bill, and their buddy who's a financial advisor comes around and says, hey, we got to balance your budget, and they said, great, but do it for me without touching my food budget or my housing budget.
Right.
It would be impossible. And it's the same thing with the state of Illinois. I mean, we've been avoiding these problems for too long. Everybody knows what the problem is. It's the elephant in the room. Pensions is the biggest one, but the government worker health insurance cost is a big one too. And I should mention that a lot of the ideas in this report, at least conceptually, have had bipartisan support in the past. So,
well,
Pat Quinn proposed right-sizing government worker health insurance back in 2011.
Right. So let's take a look. There's three in particular components here that I think worthy of note. Is number one is lasting pension reform with a savings of $12.2 billion, but this means you have to amend the state constitution. A lot of people are very hesitant at this point in Illinois to crack open the constitution for changes. But in this particular case, it would be needed to be done, as the Supreme Court pointed out to us, to get this pension reform done.
That's right. And the constitutional amendment we're talking about is a targeted constitutional amendment. This isn't a constitutional convention, so we're not talking about opening the whole thing up. And it's also different than pension amendments that people have proposed in the past. So in the past, a lot of people have said what you need to do is just delete the pension clause. Well, we actually think that government workers have a point, that that would leave them with too little certainty going into retirement, that there could be a lot of changes that happen to them. So what we're saying is, instead, let's model our pension clause after some states that still have very strong protections but have more financial flexibility than we do. And what they do is they create a distinction between the benefits you've already earned to date and the future growth rate in those benefits. And they say everything you've earned to date is protected, but we can change the growth rate going forward if we need to protect taxpayers and protect the state's finances.
I was
so that's what we proposed.
I was surprised by number two, Adam. I see it here, but that you take this on to number two and talking about a $2.9 billion savings over 5 years, where you talk about investing in classrooms over bureaucracy.
That's right. So we are talking about actually growing the K-12 education budget at about the rate of inflation, but growing it slower than the baseline, which under the baseline, we're going to be dumping in $350 million of just raw dollars into the system. The problem with that is we have a very top-heavy bureaucracy, much more so than other states. And as a result, too little of our education dollars actually make it to the classroom. Most of it's going to superintendents, assistant superintendents, their staffs, this top layer of, you know, really bloated bureaucracy that doesn't really serve students well and isn't an efficient way to do it. So we've proposed school district efficiency, a way of combining school districts so they can achieve economies of scale that'll ensure more of the education dollars actually make it to the classroom. And the research shows that we could actually improve student outcomes, get better outcomes for students by spending less overall but directing more of it to the kids.
And number three in here is asking government unions to play fair at the bargaining table. You're quoting this as a potential savings over 5 years at $4.2 billion. When you look at that, that almost singularly handles a single year of misconduct at the financing table. How would you get this done? What would need to be done to achieve number three on your list of budget 2020?
So there's two concepts in there that we're asking, asked me in particular, and state government workers to give up, which is, first, they have a Cadillac health insurance plan. They have a very generous health insurance plan, but they only pay about 23% of the costs, meaning taxpayers are subsidizing 77% of it. That's way out of line with the employee versus employer share in the private sector. And so we're talking about bringing the cost of insurance that they pay for their own health care plans in line with the private sector, in line with what people can expect in the private sector. And that saves about $500 million per year. And then the other one is giving up what they've historically had, which is automatic guaranteed raises. It's just something that you get every year, regardless of merit or any kind of performance review or anything like that, and talking about replacing that with a merit bonus system. And those two things together, like you said, save about $4.2 billion over the course of 5 years. And we actually think that there's a chance that Governor Pritzker will push for some of these changes, because so far he's been talking about finding a contract, and these are his words, that is fair for taxpayers and takes into account the fiscal condition of the state.
Everybody,
so we're asking him, yeah.
Go ahead, Adam. All you're asking is,
we're just asking him not to give away the bank.
Right. You know, everybody has an opinion, apparently, about the budget. The Commercial Club of Chicago increased taxes to 5.95% individual. It seems to me we just had one of those. Now, when I read this, as they wanted to cut corporate tax from 8% to 7%. Did you read that?
Actually, I think they're talking about increasing both the corporate and personal income tax rate by 1%.
Okay. Well, when I read it, I kind of got seven.
Right now, there's a in the Constitution, it requires that you maintain a certain ratio between corporate and personal income taxes.
Well, when I read it in the Associated Press, I read it like three times. I'm saying, wait a second, this reads to me like they want to cut from 7 to 8 to 7. Also require employees pay more for their insurance. You just talked about that part of your idea. And then cut $1 billion from the $38 billion state budget. Well, here's the thing. I spoke with Senator Paul Schimpf on Monday. He says the 2020 budget or what they are going to spend, appear to spend, is $40.4 billion. And then I spoke with Susana Mendoza, the comptroller, on Tuesday, and she said, yes, that's right, 40.4. But our revenue is closer to 36. We're looking at $4 billion out of whack right now, aren't we?
Well, the projections depend a little bit on who you get the numbers from. I think we're looking at a deficit of at least $3 billion. I think that's the baseline that we're talking about. But the solution that we've put together here would bring our revenues and expenditures in line, obviously, and would actually create a surplus this year of about $800 million. The surpluses grow over time with our budget plan, and the idea is that you use those annual surpluses to pay down that bill backlog. You know, it's sort of like we need to get out of credit card debt before we can start putting money aside in savings or offering tax cuts, because this bill backlog debt comes with very high interest penalties, and so it'll spiral out of control if we don't do something about it now. And if we make those annual surplus payments towards the bill backlog, then in the year 2024, 2025, we'll actually have a couple $1 billion that we could use to finance an income tax cut. And that's the way we'd like to see the state go, because that's the way all other states in the Midwest are going. They are all cutting their income taxes. We're the only ones talking about going in the opposite direction. And it's why we're not able to compete with them. It's why they're growing businesses, jobs, and wages much faster than we are.
$7,871,602,484.87 in estimated general funds payable backlog as of 8 a.m. this morning.
That's right. I should have clarified. The 7.8 I'm talking about is what it's projected to end the fiscal year at. So that would mean on June 30th.
All right. So, I mean, because, I talked to, as I said, the comptroller earlier this week, and we've made no effort, really, to service this backlog. And the minute I say that, somebody else texts me and says, look, what about the $6 billion we borrowed to get it down to $7 billion? Where's that? Where's that money hiding out? Because we still owe $6 billion plus interest. And that's, because we have borrowed and put off in shelves, and then I don't think we honestly report our debt.
You are correct about that. It's a whole other conversation, but we're also working on trying to improve the accounting standards that the state uses so that we're not hiding debt off books. We do have a large tens of billions of dollars, in bonded debt that doesn't even take into account the pension debt or the debt that we have for government worker retiree health insurance. Those are all a problem. But the bill backlog debt really is the worst one because it has very high interest penalties. So basically the way it works is after 90 days, if you haven't paid a vendor, if you haven't paid the bill, then you get 1% interest tacked on, and that goes up by 1% per month each month you don't pay it off.
Wow.
So that racks up really fast. They put that into place. The idea was, hey, if we have these harsh interest penalties, the state will never not pay its bills. But as you can see, that hasn't stopped them.